Hello, you're listening to Boots and Heels.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Lizzie.
Join us as we head across the country, busting some farming myths with some familiar faces.
Welcome back, guys. I hope you all had an amazing Christmas. We are kicking off the new year, 2022, with the one and only NFU President Minette Batters. Can you see how excited I am?
It's absolutely amazing to have Minette on. We'll be touching on all things women in ag and, well, hoping for the day we never have to use that phrase again.
So grab a cuppa, sit back and join us for episode 6. Well, let's start by saying thank you so much, Minette, for joining us today. I must admit, I'm so excited. When Becca and I, at the beginning of the year, we were both asked if we could have anybody on the podcast, who would we pick? And we said it would definitely be Minette Batters and Jeremy Clarkson. So that's a good start.
That certainly is. Well, I hope I don't let you down.
No, I'm so excited for this one. So really, let's jump straight into it then, because we have listeners from both a farming and non-farming background. How did you get into farming, Minette? How did it all start?
Oh, goodness. So I was brought up on farm. My parents farmed in partnership with my current landlords, but it was always going to end, if you know what I mean. So it was very much a partnership for a period of time. And my dad always made it very clear that do not think you will be farming here, because this is going to come to an end and that will be that. So I think when you're told you can't have something, it probably focuses your mind at a young age much more. And so I actually got into farming by approaching my landlords and effectively saying, if we take on these two derelict cottages and do them up, will you let us take on the farm? And to cut a very long story short, that was how I got into a long-term FBT farm business tenancy with an option to renew. So it was back in the mid-90s, but that was how I got into it. So it was no easy pathway. And it's still the same today. It's still a real challenge for people that want to farm. How do they get on the ladder?
I think that's a really important point you make. We had a first generation farmer on a couple of episodes ago, and the kind of trials and tribulations, you know, people from a non-farming background have to go through. Well, if it's bad enough if you're already in farming, it's a whole nother level if you don't have, well, sometimes it's even just a farming name to kind of fall back on, or we knew your grandfather, so we'll give you a bit of a leg up. It's a really difficult industry to get into.
It is, and I've been really keen to, I mean, young people are the future of the industry, and so the more, and I think it is changing fast, so many people now focused on agriculture and the supply chain for the opportunities that are available. And so I think it is opening up, but it remains, I think, to get a, you know, farming is long term, and you need ultimately a long term opportunity. And that still remains a massive challenge, as big as it was then, without a doubt.
Definitely. We're wanting to touch on women in ag in this episode as well, which I think adds, well, an extra element if you want to be a female farmer. I'm back on the farm at home, which I'm lucky. I absolutely love it. However, sexism is definitely still there, and it's amazing how often I can go into a kind of a farm store, or somebody comes out to the tractor or an engineer, and it's amazing how many people think, what does your dad want with this, or is your dad fixing this? And I'm like, actually it's for me, I'm sorting it. So it's definitely still there, but I don't think we can paint an all negative picture, because it's changing. I'm lucky enough to have just been selected to be an NFU student and young farmer ambassador, which I'm over the moon about. And I think things like this are amazing to get diversity in the industry and change how it looks almost.
Oh, without any doubt, Becca. I mean, things have changed a lot, and I think we have to put these things in proportion. I mean, without doubt, on my journey through the NFU, it's been about men and women being equally helpful. There have been some amazing men who've really helped and supported me, and some amazing women But you're right, occasionally things can. And I think the perception outside of the industry is still, it's a male industry. I mean, I very much remember a while ago now, I remember a delivery driver turning up. And I think when we're younger, we're a bit more feisty. I'm far more chilled about it now and don't react. But I can remember a delivery driver turning up for some feed blocks and got out the cab and said, can your husband come and unload this? And I said, well, there's no one else here. Well, how are we going to unload it then? And I said, well, I'm the farmer. And he said, well, surely I need to see your boss. And I said, look, I can unload it. And of course, the temptation for me then was really to put the pallet forks through his tarp on the side of the lorry. But I thought, no, that will not do us any good at all. But, you know, there is this perception, there really is, that, you know, farming is still a male industry. And if you look at the colleges, universities, actually, there are far more women coming into farming than men. So things are changing. And I just feel we effectively have to lead by example. You know, I am much more chilled about it now than I was, but I still think we need you, the next generation, to really challenge, you know, where things are going wrong, because things will change. They have changed, but there's still more to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's interesting that you say outside of the industry, that perceptions are still, you know, very male dominated. I mean, I didn't grow up in farming at all. I entered the industry about 4 years ago, and I was actually blown away when I joined about how many amazing females they are, how many different roles. But I was also really shocked at how they're not necessarily talked about or represented. You know, when I was a child, I was growing up with these children's books of on the farm, and it was always your male farmer, or if it's the media that I'd grown up with, and you're seeing these figures on TV. And for me, I think coming into the industry, I'm really passionate about that. It's something that me and Becca definitely want to try and change, not just in agriculture, but again, the public perception. Do you think we could be highlighting women in agriculture better, maybe in, you know, publications and the media, and maybe it needs to start early and young?
I think so. I think from an NFU point of view, one of the sort of things that has really changed, I think, perception as I see it, is our work in education. Yeah. So we very much work through a competition in primary schools called Farmvention in inner city schools, which is about effectively linking agriculture with STEM learning. And it's been so incredibly successful. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we had the 9 prize winners from across the country, literally from Northumberland to Kent, who came into London, had an event in Westminster, supported by a Labour MP who had sponsored that. And it was fantastic. We had MPs, we had ministers who had these kids in their constituencies. Mm-hmm. And these children, honestly, what they were developing and the prototypes they were developing to get to a carbon neutral world of food production, and the enthusiasm, and none of these kids had any background in farming or were even living in rural areas. And I think that is what is changing this. And it was a completely equal mix of boys and girls on a totally level playing field. Yeah. You know, they weren't even remotely thinking, not even thinking at all, that this is male or this is female. And so I think everything is about education. And actually, you know, through education, through linking agriculture to STEM learning, you're teaching children to value their food, you're teaching them to value what they're wearing, sustainability, green energy. It's incredibly important. And that probably is the single biggest thing that will change effectively the status quo. And I think in a decade, certainly in 2 decades time, you're going to see a totally different industry, because it really is the only industry that can effectively change the way we live our lives. And we're only at the tip of the iceberg of that at the moment. And that is really exciting.
I think bridging the gap, as you say, if you start that as early as possible, it kind of fosters in children this, well, an attachment from as soon as they kind of have any concept of food farming, food production. And we've probably, in some cases, it's been left a bit late. And I think we've maybe got a bit of a no man's land almost at the moment, where people, and we say it pretty much on every episode, people aren't purposefully ignorant. they've just lacked the education and the information, and it's not easily accessible. You can't go and Google what happens on a farm, because it's not as easy as that.
Without a doubt. I mean, I do think, you know, the work that we've done in primary, the work that we've done in secondary, the interest now out there is just extraordinary. And I think, too, we employed two teachers to lead on this work. And the teachers in these schools now are really pulling this, because they see that link. And I think also on diet, you know, I think nothing frustrates farmers more than what they see as the sort of anti-dairy, anti-meat. And through the work on education and building the understanding, actually, you know, kids understanding that meat and dairy are part of a healthy, balanced diet. And yeah, we all need more vegetables in it, but it is also so important to be learning about the facts, the true facts about nutritional benefit of meat and dairy in a diet. And there's nothing like giving a child the ownership of that and allowing them to do the research on it and really own that agenda. So I just think it's crucial, and to perception of our industry as well.
Definitely. So you are the NFU president. So that's obviously where all the kind of input in education and everything comes from. Obviously the first female NFU president, which is a massive achievement, and hopefully, would you say, is going some way to giving an image of diversity in farming, I guess, whether that's women in ag, whether that's not people from a non-farming background, different races, genders. It should across the board, hopefully, improve the diversity image.
I hope so. I have to say, there is nothing but nothing more annoying than being, I am always, in when I'm interviewed for the first time, it is literally, well, you are the first female president of the NFU in 113 years. And my sort of longing is when women aren't newsworthy in these roles, when it is just you are a president of the NFU and nobody is focused. So that's what success looks like. So when I was first elected, it was all about in the media, well, you're the first woman president. And you were just thinking, oh, no, please. You know, it's just about me, hopefully, doing the job well. So that has been a frustration, but it is changing. Interestingly, when I was first elected, I had a lovely letter from Caroline Fairbairn, who was at the time Director General of the CBI, and Frances O'Grady, who was again Director General and still is of the TUC. And they both wrote me lovely letters saying, welcome to the Firsts Club, because they were both the first in the TUC and the CBI at the same time when I started. So it just shows that, you know, it's not just about agriculture. Things are changing everywhere. And now, having had it sort of pitched to me that it was going to be far more difficult being a woman, the number of people that come up to me and say, well, of course, it's so much easier for you leading the organization being a woman. And I'm like, really? Why does that make any difference?
Yeah.
So it's a strange one. And again, I just think you have to focus on doing the best job that you can. And that way you earn respect from everyone. So when we're not newsworthy, that will be that successful moment.
Fab. No, I think that's so important. It's definitely something we want to keep talking about and highlight. So this is going to sound a bit out there, but Becca and I were having this conversation, and we don't actually know how do you become NFU president? How does it work? How can you apply and run? Do you have to be from a farming background? And I mean, for instance, could I eventually run to be elected?
Well, look, all you need, I say, you've got to be an NFU member.
Yeah.
So you've got to be actively farming yourself. So I'm a tenant farmer here in South Wiltshire. I farm 300 acres. We're predominantly grassland, but basically arable beef and sheep, and we're diversified with a wedding business as well. So I've been an NFU member throughout. My dad, like the vast proportion of our members, my dad was I would say an NFU member but non-engaged. And when I went through and took over the business, I said, what's this NFU sub? And he said, whatever you do, be a member of the NFU. He said, if ever there is a crisis, they will be there for you. And I always remembered that. So that is how I started off. And when I got farming myself, I wanted to get more involved. I was really frustrated at the lack of marketing and hence Ladies in Beef, that I founded eventually with Jilly Greed. But I really felt the marketing was sort of stale and stagnating, and wanted to change that. And so I then got onto the NFU South West Livestock Board, and actually I was looking at doing a Nuffield study in agricultural strategic communications, and I was at the Oxford Farming Conference, and Jack Ward from British Growers, actually I sat next to, and he said, oh, well, if you want to do a Nuffield, you must go to the NFU. And I said, well, I speak to my group secretary at my local office. And he said, no, you want to go to Stoneleigh. So I went to Stoneleigh and met with actually Guy Smith, who was there, and ages and ages ago. And that sort of lit a spark, really. My goodness, this is a huge organization. I got more involved with the Southwest. I became county chairman of Wiltshire. And so I would say, if I can do it, anyone can do it, because I literally started without, I never wanted to do this job. I never thought this job, like you, I would have asked that question. And, but I was frustrated with the status quo, and I wanted to change things and make a difference. And that is what the NFU is all about. It's about technical expertise within the staff, and it's about active farmers who can engage on every level, whether that is retail, whether that is government, who are just focused on trying to make the farming work better, routes to market, lobbying government, you know, trying to get farming policy that works for us. So that was a whirlwind trip through how I got to be NFU president. But yeah, if you're an NFU member, if you get involved with the democratic structure, because the NFU is totally run rightly by democracy, and then the sovereign body, the council, effectively, two representatives from every county in England and Wales, they are the ones that vote you in. So if I stand again this year, I have to get 75% of the vote. So in third time, you need to get 75%. And if you don't, well, you don't get elected. So that's in broad terms how it works. So you don't have to be a landowner. You can be a tenant. And yeah, if you're a member, anything is possible. And that's, I hope, really interesting. Anything else, I'll prove that.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd perhaps not argue there, but would the NFU ever consider somebody who isn't necessarily a tenant or actively farming, but are really in agriculture and very passionate about it? Do you think we should be opening it up to people who aren't necessarily on farm every day?
Potentially. I mean, the sovereign body, the council, ultimately decides, you know, where the union goes. And I guess it's always been a sort of fundamental requirement that the leader, or indeed any of the office holders in the NFU, that they are running a farming business. That has been the prerequisite. It doesn't mean to say it won't change, it won't evolve, but it won't, it can't be one person like me that comes in and says, we need to change all of this. Democracy drives it. So it's about bringing people together, and then they define where the future lies. So
that's exciting. That's opportunity in the future, because I think so many more people now from non-farming backgrounds are wanting to get involved, are wanting to make a difference, are falling in love with the industry, whether they are engineers, project managers, you know, in marketing, whether they're journalists. They're very, very passionate about what they do and about changing the industry. And I think that long term, personally, I think that'd be an amazing opportunity for people to get involved.
And I really hope the Young Ambassadors Programme, it does bring people in from, you know, from all walks of life. We have our farming supporters page, which when we did our food standards campaign with 1 million people, they could also sign up to back British farming and be on the supporters page. In one weekend, we saw 500,000 people decide to become back British farming supporters. And so you're right, there are people from all walks of life. I mean, 1 million people signed that petition in under 2 weeks. I mean, it's one of the largest petitions ever. And it just shows how many people in the country really value the role of farmers.
Fantastic.
It's a really reassuring feeling, I think, as a farmer to think, well, I'm proud to produce your food. The public are supporting me. And sometimes it does feel like, though, there is a stumbling block. And I think whether that's because often we have maybe like activists and things who almost have a louder voice, or sometimes politicians seem to be a little out of touch, we could say. I'll put that diplomatically. Obviously, the NFU is working on a big scale to try and, well, better represent farming. Boots and Heels, I would say, we're hopefully growing and trying to do it on a small scale and hopefully a growing scale. But what more things can be done, do you think, to better represent the industry? I guess if you're an individual farmer maybe trying to do something, what should you be doing?
Oh, look, what you guys are doing and the power of grassroots initiatives effectively is so powerful. I mean, do not underestimate how powerful it is. And I really saw that with effectively Ladies in Beef when Julie Greed and I brought that together, that we could say things that the NFU potentially couldn't, or the CLA couldn't, or the TFA couldn't. We could just say stuff.
Yeah.
And we weren't tied to any level of democracy or anything else. We could just say it how it was. So it's incredibly powerful. And the more initiatives I think we have like yours, just continually shine a positive spotlight. And you are free to champion the industry and the power of social media now. You made that really important point about the noise. You know, there are some very small groups out there that are very, very noisy and, you know, to a certain extent are wholly anti-farming, particularly livestock farming. You know, they don't want that to exist. This sort of, you know, animal rights movement just wants to see an end to that. So how do we combat that? Well, you combat it by positive messages. You don't combat it by saying one side is right and one side is wrong. Yeah. You combat it by drowning it out effectively. So the more initiative we have like yours, that are about young people that are really positive and ambitious and saying, look, this is what we are, this is what we do, then that is brilliant. I think the more of it the better.
Can you tell I'm having a little fangirl moment. I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you. I'm so chuffed, honestly. You are such an inspiration. That's proper made me like, yeah, be.
Well, I remember what it was like, you see. I remember what it was like when I was trying to say stuff and couldn't, and I know how infuriating that is, and the more we can give people a voice the better.
Fantastic. So another thing that we kind of touched on was your frustration, you said, about the first female president. And I think eventually what we'd like to do is not use phrases like women in ag or women farmers, just farmers. You know, you've got other professions where I think that's definitely got a step forward now. You've got a nurse and a doctor, which in my head now is a male or female. Doesn't really matter. And the same with a police officer instead of policeman. And I know we've touched on obviously Boots and Heels being really good initiatives. I think long term it would be good to change that. You know, I do think women in ag is a really important phrase, but eventually it would be quite nice to just have farmers. Do you agree?
I completely agree. But I do think, I always remember going to a Women in Ag event, about the first one in Scotland. And it brought people together that were living in very, very isolated parts of the country, running a family, running a business, never getting out of that business. And to be able to bring them together and share the challenges, the opportunities, just to know that there are other people facing the same thing, it was incredibly powerful. And, you know, ultimately the Scottish government put in a quota system, which I really, really don't like, and I think women in general really, really don't like it. And in many ways in politics, I think there is far too much focus on women, and it should be always about the best person for that job.
Yeah.
But things have had to be done in order to empower women that you can change things. You know, whether you go down the commercial route or the political route, it's really good to get off the farm and get out and share, you know, those challenges and those opportunities and just daily life. It makes such a difference. So at the moment it's still really needed, but I'm totally with you. I will love the day when it is, they're not needed effectively. It's not anything referenced to women. I've spoken to a lot of dining clubs across the country that are male, you know, they are male only dining clubs, and then some have set up all female groups in competition to the all male ones. And actually when it is just farmers and nobody is caring where they come from or what gender they are, that is true success. But everybody needs to have done what we've done today in order to get there.
Agreed. So you speak about kind of the politics side of things, and obviously you're very active speaking to politicians such as Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister. So you're obviously having to tackle major issues on behalf of the farming community. And I think something that Becca and I have definitely had a chat about is that sometimes politicians appear to be the most detached from their food, yet they're making the decisions. Is this something you feel strongly about?
Oh, strongly, passionately, and infuriated by it, yeah. if I'm honest, because there is nothing more important than the food that we eat. And I think that the huge successes of agriculture have allowed effectively people to lead the urban lives, the service-based economy that we now have. And so for politicians to forget the importance of food is a fundamental mistake. You know, we would never forget how important it is to be able to defend our country. And yet food, we just seem to think that it will happen regardless. Now, that isn't all politicians, and things are changing. And the Prime Minister for me is sort of work in progress, shall I say. But, you know, his conference speech, it was all about Build Back Beaver, setting huge amounts of land aside for nature. And in those conversations, I'm always saying, what about the people? What about the people? You know, I represent living, breathing communities, and they underpin fragile parts of our country. And that's about the local schools, that's about the allied trades, that's about the vets. That, you know, if the raw ingredients aren't grown here, those other things go too. Now, that's work in progress with this government. I think we are making progress. Them signing up to self-sufficiency metrics as part of food security reporting will be a clear signal on that. But we do take our food for granted. And things like lockdown last year, where everybody had empty shelves, you know, I have members of the cabinet, you know, texting me saying, well, you know, you can have anything. We've got to feed this country. 17 million people is a lot of people to feed. But for the entire time that we were in the EU, politicians took it for granted. So it's going to take time to reset the importance of growing what we're good at here and growing more of what we're good at here, of exporting more, of investing in exports. And you can't do anything for nature. You can't do anything for the environment unless you have profitable, thriving agricultural businesses. And that lies at the heart. So that's the message that I push every single day of the week to, you know, effectively just do whatever it takes to get people to wake up and smell the coffee.
For sure. And I think, as you say about lockdown and food shortages, it was a real reality check for people, and people turning to farm shops, buying locally and supporting just kind of farm gate eggs and simple things like that. Is, I think for a farmer, it's a really, really nice thing to see. It's a shame it had to come about in those circumstances, but for people to turn back to that. And I'd say hopefully a good proportion of people have changed some of their shopping habits and buying habits off the back of that. You know, they'll still rely on supermarkets, but oh, we will just go to the farm shop and get a few bits today. And if everybody makes a small change to buying locally, it will make a massive kind of wave of difference, you'd hope.
Oh, without doubt. And, you know, people, I know some people have stepped back from that sort of, you know, they couldn't buy things in the supermarkets where they have been. So they were finding that they could buy things in the local farm shop or the local village shop. And I think a big element of that loyalty has stayed. But I think as farmers too, you know, the way things have gone online sales, it gives us much more opportunity to have control of end to end, manage our risk effectively. I mean, selling, you know, we live with a retail price war that's unlikely to change anytime soon. So the more we have control of end to end of the real value chain, and we own the value in that chain, the better. So it won't be for everyone, it won't be for the whole of the business, but there are a lot of opportunities now whereby we can really focus on added value. And I think if I have a hope with the future of the environmental land management scheme and the sustainable farming incentive, we really, really need to look at how we work as farmers and growers together, how we have added value opportunities. I mean, microbreweries have been a classic case in point of adding value. We've lost a lot of the small abattoirs. You know, we really, really need to bring back a more regionalized local agenda, because the public, every bit of surveying that we're doing, that we do externally, is saying more and more people want to be able to buy British and buy local. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think, I guess when you're talking about adding value, people selling meat boxes and things like that, you're selling your story as well as your product. And people like that. There's a person behind it. It's not just a mindless conveyor belt. You do know your sheep, you do know your cattle and your pigs, and you've put a lot of time and, dare I say it, love. Farmers won't admit that they love their animals, but a lot of people do.
Oh, without doubt. And that's coming across. And as people link in more to provenance and to the story. And I mean, I think what is fascinating, we did a lot with Jamie Oliver, of course, in that standards campaign, and seeing his passion for the farming sector and for buying British is just infectious. And, you know, there are so many of his supporter base, and Jeremy Clarkson very much doing the same of reaching people that we don't reach. And the number of people that I've had coming up to me on the back of working with both of those two has been, gosh, we didn't know, you know, we just didn't know how important this is. So the more we can expand our voice, and I think, you know, the fact that chefs now, I trained as a chef and I'm passionate about food, and to have chefs that are championing production and provenance, welfare standards, that really, we need to see more and more of it, so that restaurants, hotels, pubs are really sort of walking the walk on this and making sure that they are buying local, they are buying British, and that people know when they're going out into hotels and restaurants, pubs and bars, that that is what they are getting. And I think that whole agenda is really changing because people are demanding it.
Definitely. So looking towards the future, Minette, what advice would you give to the younger generation to be the change of the future?
I think it is about following your passions in life, your dreams. You know, don't let people sidetrack from that. If you want to do this, I'm not saying it will be easy. I look back at my journey and there's been times when it has been really, really tough, and times in this job when there's been some really dark days. But, you know, follow your passions without a doubt. Accept that you will get things wrong, you know, and embrace that, because only by getting things wrong and, I guess, cocking it up, do you learn from that and get better. So never worry about the mistakes, because the mistakes will what makes you effectively better in the end. And I think in this sort of world of perfection, whereby we're meant to know every journey of our lives, you know, when I'm saying to my kids now, who are 17, when I was 17, I didn't really have a clue what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And now we expect everybody to know exactly what you want to do, and you don't need to. I think, you know, you can never escape hard work, you know, put your heart and soul into it, define where your passions are, put your heart and soul into it, accept that things will go wrong, learn from it, and you'll be better for it. But I guess that would be my advice. You know, we can just look for perfection too early, and, you know, life's a journey, and you want to, above all else, enjoy it.
For sure. I think that's great advice. So we're coming to our final question now, and we do ask all of our guests this, and I'm obviously team boots, mim or wellies most of the time. I mean, I may get my heels on every now and then. Lizzie's obviously the heels of the duo. This one, I can't call this one, because you're a combination of both, I would say, but are you team boots or team heels?
I am definitely both. At weekends, I do every other weekend without any help on the farm at all, and that's always been what I've done, so that I keep really in touch with it, and whatever happens, I just have to get on and deal with it. So my weekends, every other weekend, is very much spent in boots, and if I get any spare time in the week, that is spent in boots too. And of course, we're always on call, aren't we? So, you know, when we're spring carving or autumn carving, if there's no one here, it doesn't matter. I can remember getting back from Devon's show, literally getting my son to get the carving jack out, ripping off my skirt, pulling on my waterproof, and say to my son, when it's my funeral, you remember what your mother was doing. And So it is both. It is both for me. And to be honest, I really love both. You know, it's good to get dressed up. And I guess my favourite thing, though, is to be back on the farm in my scruffy gear.
Oh, well, thank you so much for today, Manette. It has meant so much to have a chat with you and to talk about the future, women in agriculture, and yeah, get your perspective. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, Becca, and both of you, Lizzie, it's been such a privilege. Thank you so much for having me on.
Wow, what an episode. I can't believe we've actually spoken to Manette, Bex.
Amazing. As you said, you've ticked one off the list now.
Clarkson, we are coming for you next.
Remember to keep in touch on our social media at Boots and Heels UK. As always, we love to hear your feedback and any comments. So yeah, thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.